dwelling in the darkest depths of the mind. It's time for Mark D. Valenti and Brain Burrow.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark D. Valenti, and this is Brain Burrow. This is one of our sessions where we dig deep with our guest. It gives them an opportunity to really talk about themselves, things they value, things they fear. What do they want from themselves? It's up to you, the listener and viewer, to take it in and decide, how does this connect to me? So I'm very pleased today to introduce my guest, Kelly Maroney, and I'm going to hand it over to her with the big open-ended question, who exactly is Kelly Maroney?
Oh, start me with the easy ones first.
Huh? Sure.
I'm just going to take your suggestion and just start talking and not overthink it. We'll see what happens. It might be entertaining. Okay, so I am, I think, a very kind and person who cares about other people and is interested in having my life make things better for other people and for myself. And I feel driven to make a difference, you know, not necessarily by going out and curing cancer, but to make a difference to other people, because otherwise, what's the point? I'm from Minnesota. When I was a teenager, I went to New York and I ended up in Los Angeles. I loved each place I lived in as though it were the only place in the world, but particularly Los Angeles now. And so I'm a big fan of old Hollywood and I love glamour. Even though I'm kind of a character actress, I love glamour. So my big dream in life was to become Betty Davis. And so I guess that kind of follows. She wasn't exactly what you call a beauty, but she was still a leading lady, so like that. And I love animals, and I have a great deal of, the only thing that really makes me angry is to see cruelty towards animals, cruelty towards other people, not caring, you know, the way we don't care about people living on the street. We have not tried to figure out that solution. Those are the kind of things that make me mad. And the kind of things that make me happy are kindness and just, I love to hear people laugh. I love to hear children laugh. I love to hear animals laugh. And right now in Los Angeles, it's getting hot now, but everything was in bloom and it was just almost like you could hear classical music when you walked out, you know, because I live by the Hollywood Hills and there's a beautiful walk that I can take. It's almost like you don't even have to have music because nature sort of, we have the birds and everything too. And let's see, what else am I? I'm not all sweetness and light though. I have my angers and my drives, and I certainly have made a lot of what I think are mistakes in my life, but they have made me the person I am. So I guess I should be grateful, but like who wants to be grateful for that? But I am grateful anyway, because if you haven't been tried in any way in your life, then you don't really know what you're gonna do. And as a result, I like to think of myself today as a person who will stand up for what's right and will get up and not give up. And you know, I play a lot of final girls and kind of like the hero in movies, even though on television, I tend to be kind of a shit. I always play the bad girls, but in the movies, I played several final girls and heroes. And I like to think that that I would stand up and say enough is enough and try to save as many people as I can. Yeah, I do have that. I mean, that didn't come out of nowhere. I have that where I would not give up. I would fight for somebody. I would, you know, not just take things lying down like that. And what else? I'm excited to see what the rest of life will bring. And I've had such a wonderful life so far that I look back and I think how lucky, impossibly lucky I have been so far. And I know you can't really ask for more, but I do, because I just believe, you know, the universe is boundless. And I think that there's the best days of our lives are still yet to come. So it's very exciting.
Kelly,
here's another thing too.
Sure.
That I like to say is that if we, when you're in a terrible mood or you're feeling sorry for yourself, if you think about all the other people in the world that would kill to be where you are, even yourself, 3 to 5 years ago, you'd kill to be where you are right now. I always say, you know, somebody slapped me in the face. That was ridiculous. Snap out of it, you know? The gratitude thing is just always, I mean, I always try to, like, don't get wrapped up. I'm very conscious of don't get wrapped up in negativity. There's always a way to go where you could just you know, circle the bowl if you want to. And then there's another choice, which is probably even more valid than that. Although I don't want to discount anybody else's. I mean, sometimes you feel horrible and you're sad and you're hurt and you're angry, and that's part of life. And I'm not saying dishonor that at all, but work through it, because the ultimate goal would be to realize that you're so much bigger than that. And that, I know it's so corny, but this too shall pass. And it always does.
Yeah, Kelly, thank you. Obviously, you've thought a lot about how these different things have meant to you over your life. And there's so many things I want to ask you about now, given you've shared a lot. So thank you for opening up like that. Let's talk about the gratitude part, since you called that out. How did you get to this point whenever you recognize and cherish gratitude in your life?
I was having an adult life when I was a teenager, and a lot of things snowballed, and I was overwhelmed with a lot of things, and it just was too much. And I sort of got into a very painful place. But then, objectively speaking, I mean, I think I read a lot of spiritual books, and I was always spiritual, but I really hung on to that at that point in my life. And I realized think about other people, you know, I mean, it's a thing in acting too. If you're ever nervous in a scene, it's not about you. Focus on the other person and what you're trying to get from them, and you'll stop being nervous. It's the same thing in life. Focus on other people and what's going on with them. And all of a sudden you realize how much you have to be thankful for. And, you know, instead of, you know, hissing and moaning about what's wrong with your life, which, you know, probably isn't that much in perspective, trying to make somebody else's life better, or make them laugh, or make them feel cared for, you know, make them feel seen. That's all anybody really wants, is to have somebody to feel like somebody has heard me, you know, somebody saw me and they cared how I felt. That's all. I mean, that's the big thing. I think, I mean, we all want everything else. All we want is everything. But I think that that's the bottom line. So that's really easy to do, especially if you've felt some pain or some sadness or some anger or whatever misfortune you've had in your own life. You certainly do understand. So the benefit of that is you have some compassion, some honest compassion to offer them, where they're going to feel like somebody has heard me. I'm not by myself.
Yeah. Well said. You know, and I think your connectedness to other humans and animals as well, I think, is extremely evident. So that's a fantastic place to be. So, yeah, I mean, so I think, you know, a lot of times when people express a lot of compassion, they have what we call compassion fatigue, right? Where you feel like you're constantly compassionate toward other people. I was wondering if you ever feel that way, if you ever feel, because you're so connected to other people suffering and helping them, do you ever feel fatigued at any point in your life about that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, of course. And sometimes I just have to shut it out. And, you know, I just, it gets to be too much. Mm-hmm. And then you just have to go, I have to turn this out for a second, be by myself, let my inner bitch come out until she's happy again. Because if you don't, you're going to burn out, or, you know, it's not going to go well. You really have to take care of yourself. And sometimes you just feel like a shit, you know, you just want to be like, you kind of feel like, I feel like a jerk right now. And so I'm just going to stay away from others till it passes.
Well, and I think that's a really important point. You know, on this show, a lot of people that listen or watch, they often write to me and say, wow, I never knew that this actor, this director felt this way. It actually didn't realize that they were human, right? So I think what you've just identified is something really important, is that even Kelly Maroney, who's very connected to other people, needs to compartmentalize for herself sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I think everybody does.
Sure. So how do you do that? Because a lot of people feel guilty about taking time for themselves. So I think there may be a lesson here, Kelly, in how you're able to feel okay with that.
Well, I've seen the aftermath of when I don't do it, which is, you know, I'm exhausted. I start to get, you dry up. It's all of a sudden you're not helping anybody. You know, and how can people know that right away? You know, they know it. And you just have to, you learn by trial and error. Like, what is too much? Is that if I don't walk away and rest and be by myself a little bit now, no one's going to be happy.
Very true.
So I'll just do that for the sake of all of us. And that way you don't feel guilty. I'm doing this not just for me. I'm doing this for you too. So yeah, you can thank me later. I'm going to go be bitchy in the bathroom for like 5-10 minutes and I'll be back.
That's
and
a
you're
fair
gonna like it better.
That's a fair approach. Well, and what really resonates there is if you truly do care about other people, this is also for them as well. And they don't want to have to deal with you or any of us whenever we're feeling depleted like that.
No, I mean, what is going to serve anybody if I have a meltdown?
Right, you know? Right. You also, and again, just talking with you even for a short bit here, you're just clearly connected to, again, all the other living things around you. You mentioned and called it out that the thing that angers you is whenever you see cruelty toward others. So talk a bit about that, because it seems like that's a pretty strong emotion in you.
It's often what I use, like when I have to turn around and say, I've just about had it in a movie or something and go after something and, you know, go after a murderer or a killbot or a zombie or whatever it may be, is I use that little trigger of, and I kind of found it gradually through the roles I was playing. It wasn't really conscious in my life as a kid or anything like that, but, I do remember a couple of times when I was growing up that I would see things and I would be afraid to say or do anything because I was too small. And I hated that. So here I have a script where I'm supposed to do it. And that, you know, you could just let it wail because you're supposed to do that. And that's how I really got, I got to experience that, you know, and it's a deep thing. Yeah. It's for sure a deep thing. Could be a past life. I don't even know.
Well, thanks for exploring that a bit. Again, as you called it out, the emotions are there and it's interesting how you challenged or channeled your emotions into your roles.
Always.
Yeah.
I can't speak for all act. I think that's what we do.
Sure.
We kind of channel what's going on. So that other people can have they can connect with us and have a catharsis that way.
Yeah, I think that's another interesting point, right? Because most people that are watching this or listening are not actors, so they may not have the same channel. So you're saying that perhaps people could channel you by watching you and saying this is a good outlet for their own anger on certain things.
Well, Catherine, Mary Stewart and I, who were in Night of the Comet together, we've had the experience of people, several people, more than a few, say, you know, the reason I didn't get killed in high school is I would say, what would Reggie and Samantha do? And, you know, we both looked at each other and went, well, we do that too. What would Samantha do right now? Because nobody in real life has that kind of chutzpah that, you know, that those two girls had. But if we were, what would we do? We wouldn't take this crap, you know, that does happen. It's, you know, and so gratifying to hear, you know, I was being picked on and I said, what would Reggie and Samantha do? And I did it and they stopped. I'm like, oh, good. It works in real life. That's good to know. no, but, you know, it's just, I think that people do that. I think that's why we all love to go to the movies and love to watch television and love to hear stories. It teaches us about life, you know, and how to handle things that we need to know how to handle because we haven't learned it yet.
Yeah, really great point on that, right? Because you're constantly, whether directly giving back to the community or indirectly in the form of your films and any of the other connections you have. So I think that says a lot. I want to know, and this isn't, I don't typically delve into this, but I think it actually is pretty relevant because you talked about being where you live and going outside and just absorbing everything. So I'm imagining that the year previous with the pandemic and isolation, I mean, that must have impacted you somehow.
Well, actually, that's when I found my walk. I was always too busy before. and there was nothing else to do. That was so I went out for this walk, and it's beautiful out there, and there's obviously a social, you can walk and not see anybody. There's a great deal of social distancing.
Sure.
And I thought, this is beautiful. Why do I not do this? And I felt stupid. I was like, this has been back here the whole time, and I haven't taken advantage of it. And it's so wonderful. I mean, you can, there's a walking meditation, you know, several of them that you can do. And I think you just sort of fall into a meditation, even if you don't do it on purpose. It's fantastic, especially, you know, I mean, Southern California, we call it golden time for a reason. And when the heat of the day goes away, it gets this lovely golden light. And, you know, we have owls, we have deer, and we have every kind of flower. And Charlie Chaplin's house is up out there someplace, one of his old houses. It's just, I mean, it's beautiful. So I always used to gauge that too, is with a depression, like if I've had a depression, I remember thinking, I still see the flowers and I still think flowers are pretty. So I can't be scary depressed, because if I was scary depressed, I wouldn't see it or I wouldn't care. So I always sort of gauged how I was doing by how I was reacting to other stuff. Now that you mentioned it.
A lot of people go through life and are not really connected to themselves, let alone the people around them. But it sounds like you are able to make that connection even to the most minute things, which are the flowers you mentioned.
Yeah, I don't think of them as minute. I mean, as an actor, I would be committing suicide if I shut myself off.
Hmm.
And it's actually a fear I think of a lot of us actors is, you know, what if I just shut down? Because, you know, the whole mechanism here is so fragile. It's like the least little thing can happen if you feel threatened, or you have to learn how to work through all the things that might possibly shut you down when you're working. And there's a million of them, you know, things that could happen on a set. And the sort of your lifeline is, I have to know how to stay present. I have to know how to connect, because that's my job, you know? So I think that's the training was there, you know, for from doing it for decades. I didn't really put it together that it was, I didn't always put it together that's helping me in my life or that my life is helping me in my work, but it just often I'll be doing a role and then later on I'll realize, oh, do you know what was going on in reality when I got that part? Aha, no wonder I got that part. You don't always see it right away.
Well, and that's fascinating as well, that you're able to make that connection, because you're allowing yourself to be open in different places, but yet there's still got to be some level of a wall that you put up, because if we allow ourselves to be totally free and open all the time, I mean, that could be a pretty scary place. So how do you preserve some level of a wall, just this little level, when you allow yourself, but also balance it with allowing yourself to be open as you do?
How do I do that? Because I do it. I don't want to say it's like disassociating, because that's a problem, but it is like disassociating and then saying, okay, I'm going to be here now in a weird way. It's like I become the observer and I can just sort of watch what's going on. And then I go, no, time to be here. So that's a way I do it, I think. I don't really, I guess maybe I'm just used to it now, knowing when I got to protect. So it's sort of happened so fast that it's funny to have to deconstruct it at this point. But I think that's what it is.
Okay. And deconstructing it for any of our behaviors isn't always easy. But thank you for trying to do that a bit, because I think it's insightful for people that are listening or watching to say, how does she do that? So I appreciate you doing that.
A big thing that I learned for survival in my life, I could probably share one thing, like how to survive
sure.
the world, is you get to decide which way you're going to go. It's up to us. It's up to me. Like, I can go this way and I have a pretty good idea what will happen there, or I can do this thing, or I can let this, you know, destroy me. Or I can take a look at it and go, huh, I'm sure I'm going to learn something from that. Let's keep going. It's my choice. And it's when you know that you're a sovereign in here, that it's you no matter what, and you get to decide how you're going to feel about something, what you're going to think about it, what you're going to do with your life, where you're going to be, who you're going to be with. You really do get to decide. I mean, you might not like all your choices, might, you know, but choice by choice by choice, that's how we make our lives. So if you start doing that and just know it's my life, it's my, it's am I going to be depressed today, or am I going to do a gratitude list and try to find the humor in things and you know, try to cheer somebody else up that like really looks like a sad sack today. I mean, that's up to us. And so it gives you a great deal of the, I don't think any of us has control over anything, but it gives you a great sense of the illusion of control. Hmm. So then you sort of feel, like I said, sovereign, like, okay, you know, things can happen out there. They're not happening. And also you always, the philosophy to me that has really helped me is things are not happening to me. Things are happening for me. And we all think that people tend to go, the universe is either a dangerous place or a safe place. And people that lean towards the universe as a safe place generally tend to feel happier and do better. And the people who feel, and rightfully so, I mean, God knows, the world is a dangerous place and that's where they're set, you know, that's the set point, have a harder time, because then everything becomes something to potentially be threatened by. Or so it's very important to me to keep my mindset the right way. But I learned that over time. I mean, I don't want to, I mean, over a long period of time, where it's a survival thing. I mean, you, sure. You know,
yeah,
I'm sitting here.
No, I mean, I'm glad you acknowledge that it does take time. And what you're really talking about, you talked about sovereign, but also it's the concept of autonomy, right? As human beings, mm-hmm. we are autonomous beings, but oftentimes in our lives, to your point about the language we use, we say things like, oh, I feel like everything's happening to me, or I feel like I have no choice. We use that language. So some people that may be watching this or listening may feel that their life is just closing in on them and they have no choice. So Kelly, I wonder if you can talk a bit about the journey that led you to this point where you do recognize you have autonomy, where even in the most quote unquote dire situations, you still have a choice in how you react. You still have a choice in how to navigate that. You said it took years. Can you talk a bit about how you got here?
Taking my whole life, and I practice it every day. Hmm. One story that made a huge impression on me was the story of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who was in prison under the most horrible conditions. He was in prison and he chose to find the joy in it, and he did find the joy in it despite the very limited things to be happy about there. He did find his own inner joy that we can always, I, this sounds like so unrealistic to somebody who's going, what are you talking about, you know, I'm miserable here, and we acknowledge that. I used to notice it in little things, like, oh my god, something would just be bothering me so much, and I was in such agony over something, and I go home and I didn't really want to tell anybody about it, because it's, you know, it was so horrible, I felt so horrible that I didn't even really want to talk about it or tell anybody else. So I turned on the television and it would be a night for my favorite program, and I'd be happy as a clown. I thought, that is interesting. Even when I was a little kid, it's like, okay, that's interesting. I saw that then. It's like, why, how can that be, you know? And then when I went through a thing called a counseling thing, and a big part of it was feelings. If you feel a feeling like you're happy and happy and happy about something, it goes away. But if you're feeling something and you're resisting, like, I don't want this to happen, I don't want to feel this way, it persists. You stay stuck in it because you can't get your mind off it, and you're just fighting it and fighting it and fighting it. That's that old cliche, what you resist persists. But you notice if something's making you happy, you tell everybody about it, and then that feeling goes away, because feelings fluctuate. Feelings are not facts. And so, I mean, you cannot love your facts for that day. But I mean, there was a period of time because everybody thinks when you're an actress that you make a lot of money and you're rich and stuff. Well, I didn't make a lot of money because I was a kid. And there was one point when I had to take a waitress job, and I had people recognizing me. They'd say, oh, honey, what happened? You know, and I didn't see anything wrong. I thought, I'm not hooking, you know, it's an honest, but I would, and it was a really hard time because, you know, first of all, how the hell did I get here? Second of all, people feeling sorry for me or going, oh, something must be wrong with her. She's waiting tables. Yeah. You know, all those things are just so horrible that, but I found that I could have a good day at work if I wanted to. And it was challenging, but I figured out a way to do it because otherwise, I mean, here, okay. If you get to know, if you know that you get to have a decent day or you can have a horrible day, what do you want to do? You want to have a good day. So find something about that that's, that you can like laugh about or, you know, find something good about it and challenge yourself. Make a list of 10 good things that happened or five or three good things that happened and hold on to those because feelings are like they, feelings and beliefs and thoughts, they attract each other. So if you start having positive feelings, that tends to snowball. But if you start having negative feelings, those snowball faster, far more. Like you really don't want to spend a lot of time beating yourself up or anything like that because it does shut you down longer than you want to be shut down because you have to dig your way back out of it. I mean, actually, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So you just have to, I mean, you're the only constant in your own life. So you got you. No matter what else is going on, you're there. So you could have to learn how to be your own friend because if you're, I mean, I wouldn't hang out with anybody that talks to me like I talk to myself. So I have to work on that, you know, because I'm all I've got. I mean, you know, I mean, not really, but you know what I mean? In the deepest, deepest way. I mean, we get here alone, we leave alone. So, you know, I better learn to get along with myself. I think we all do have to, let's get along with it. Let's be nicer to ourselves. And, you know, sure. If that person inside our head insists on being destructive and criticizing and mean, to figure out a way to get it on your side. It's like, you know, I know exactly what you're saying. I know you're trying to protect me. So would you help me with this? I have to go in there and learn all these lines or whatever it is that you need to do. Would you help me with that? And it does. You have to give it a new task other than repeating a new one. You give it another task.
That is beautiful, actually, because you talked about cognitive distortions, right? Which are the kind of the lies we tell ourselves. It doesn't reflect reality. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the things we tell ourselves, right?
I think it's true.
Yeah. And yeah, and you brought up another good point too, right? Is oftentimes we're kind to others. If we notice, let's say, a friend or family member who's sitting there beating themselves up, we are kind to them, but rarely are we as kind to ourselves. And it sounds like you're also saying that there's an importance in promoting positive self-talk as well.
Yeah, it's essential. It's, you can literally destroy yourself if you let that critic go and not try to get it on your side. You know, you can't shut it up because like any negative thing, the harder you fight it, the stronger it gets. But you can try to get it on your side. You can say, I appreciate your input.
Yes.
We're not going to do it that way this time. But if you want to be useful, help me do this.
Is there anything you want people to walk away with after seeing this? In other words, what do you want listeners or viewers to know about or think about Kelly Maroney after this discussion today?
About me?
Yeah.
If I can retrain my mind, you can retrain yours.
Ooh, that was powerful and succinct. Well said, Kelly. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So Kelly, I want to thank you very much for appearing on the show today. It was very insightful and you have a lot of fantastic advice. And I'm hoping that people who are listening or hearing may look further into it. So I want to thank you very much for chatting today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's unusual to be asked these very deep questions in an interview, you know, and it's a good thing that you don't tell people too much beforehand because then anybody would sit there and go, how can I sound deep? What can I say that's really cool? You don't give us a chance to do that,
that's
which,
right.
You know, at times we're going to sound like an idiot, but other times you might be surprised what we actually do say when it's coming spontaneously instead of, you know, all planned out because that always looks stupid. watch it later and you go, oh my God. I thought it would be so cool. It's not.
Well, you were definitely a good sport about all this and sounded extremely deep when it came to a lot of this. In fact, if we had more time, it'd be great to delve further into it. I think the authentic Kelly is, people would want to see that more than scripted Kelly anyway.
Well, thank you. Hopefully I try to get as much I try to make my characters as much of a human being as I can, because I know nobody wants to see. Here's my idea about this character. You don't want to see that. You want to see it come to life. Yeah. And you want to be able to tell, well, there's a little weakness there. Or there's something she needs to work on. Or, oh, she's hurt by that. And all the things that you know that aren't in the script, that aren't said, but the audience knows. She's hurt by that, but she's not going to say anything about it. Or she's not giving up, even though it looks like she is. You know, those kind of things, people get that, because when you're watching something, you're not watching with your thoughts. You're actually you're absorbing with your whole self. And when we're doing that, we get so much more information than we do when we're stuck in our heads. That's my way of saying, I hope I bring that to my work.
Yes, it's clear that you do. Well, it's clear that you do. And that empathy, where people see themselves and can relate to somebody on the screen, is going to make that more powerful connection, mm-hmm. as you said, than just somebody who's reading lines. So nice work with that.
That's why it's so much fun to play an evil person. Because we all have evil in it. You know, there's that, I am a cliche god. I can get, within all of us lies a Mother Teresa and an Adolf Hitler. And it's just a question of bringing, you know, what wolf are you going to feed? And so, I mean, Anthony Hopkins is so wonderful to watch, because he doesn't lay any judgment on that. And I learned that too, because the first character I played on television was horrible. She was a horrible person. I had to figure out why she thought she was right, because you can't play somebody that you're judging. But my first thought was, I'm going on that. The whole United States is going to see me being a terrible person. I couldn't believe it. It's like, really? But then I it became fun, and then I grew to love it when people walk up to me and they go, I hate you. Because, you know, they were enjoying hating me so much that's what we wanted, you know. But sometimes you just have to let your the things that you want, that your little ego about what you'd like people to think of you, you have to, that has to be history if you're gonna be an actor. And it's very hard. Like I said, all these things are lifelong processes that you try to do every day. And some days you do them better than other days, but you keep trying.
Yeah, well said. And it's, again, the line is blurred between what you do as an actor and then what you do in your life. And I think that's what makes you successful in both of them. So nice work with that as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So again, pleasure to have you on today. And again, I want to thank the listeners and viewers as well for tuning in. And on behalf
of— Thank you for listening to me, Babel.
Yes. No, it's part, yeah, exactly. It's all, again, it's all authentic.
Thank you very much.
It's all authentic.
It's been great. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly. I appreciate that. Okay. Well, on behalf of—
I'm honored that anybody would listen to me like blather on like that. Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh, it's my pleasure. Listen, that's what the show is about, people being our authentic selves, and people do reference their work, but it's always in the context of their life. So I think that you are doing what everybody does as being a human being. So you're awesome. So thank you.
Thank you. I noticed one thing is that we never get to hear anything about you. I'm gonna turn the tables on you.
Yes. And on that note, we're actually out of time today.
Aha, isn't that convenient?
Right. It is convenient. So you never know. You never know. We'll see what happens in the future. But I appreciate you calling that out.
Maybe I should come and interview you.
Listen, I'm game for anything. We'll see what we'll see if people tune in for that. Who knows?
Okay.
Okay. We'll have to take you up on that, Kelly.
All right. Maybe a couple of your other guests would like to do that too.
Oh, like right. It could be like a big, round table. That's right. Exactly. Now, that's right. Exactly. Well, all right, we'll see. That could be a fun rapid fire of questions and put me turned on the table. That's for sure. We'll see what happens.
Well, I think you're doing a great thing here, and I hope that people get something out of it. And I know that it's certainly different than anything I got to do. So appreciate that.
Hey, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to spread the word. And, you know, my incentive and motivation is to spread the word. I mean, and then you're part of that by, you know, by appearing on the show. You have your own fan base, people who look to you and really are inspired by you. And so I hope as part of this, we keep spreading the word. So thanks for adding to that.
Okay. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And my pleasure as well. Okay, on behalf of Kelly Maroney, this is Mark DiValenti. I want to thank you for tuning into Brain Burrow and have an amazing rest of your day.
You just dug deep with Mark D. Do you want more? Follow Mark on Instagram at ValentiHorror and subscribe to the Brain Burrow podcast.